Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Hey, before we get started here, if y'all don't mind, I'm going to change my boots real quick.
Pants. What is in your jacket?
Are you putting on lacrosse?
Take off your jacket.
Oh,
I'm going to change my boots real quick.
Oh, my.
Just got to get a little more.
I feel like I should go change. I feel underdressed.
Yeah. So I'm, Brent, why don't you describe what I'm putting on here?
Well, Clay, I'm speechless. Clay has pulled out a pair of gray Crocs, official Crocs, because I can see the alligator on the side.
And he has them in work mode.
They are
four-wheel drive.
Four-wheel drive, yeah. And they match his puffy jacket.
They do. They do match my gray puffy jacket.
And
I just thought I would.
It's quite the ensemble. Now, wait a minute. Are we? Do I need to hook mine in? Are we going to fight?
For this, I would hook them in four-wheel drive.
Here we go.
No, I just, after last render, when, you know, kind of dogged on the Crocs, and my kids bought these for me for Christmas. So they're highly convenient.
The gift that keeps on giving.
They are.
Yes.
Waterproof.
Jelly of the Month Club.
Mm-hmm. You can don't worry about them.
Man, they are. Especially when you're duck hunting. Because I was this week, if you listen to the podcast, you heard me say that I have a goal to see how long I can be a waterfowler, which I'm a new waterfowler. How long I can be a waterfowler and not actually own my own pair of waders. So I'm borrowing waders. But it's come back to bite me when Sean Weaver is the guy you're borrowing them from, because he duck hunts, you know, 100 days a year or whatever. And the waders that he let me borrow Leaked. Had a hole in them. I learned that you can take Crocs with you so you can stay in the waders the least amount of time possible.
I got you.
Nice.
Let's talk about another thing, and that is all that right. You were complaining about how they made your figure look. You were like, oh my gosh, I look huge in these.
It's a true story.
He did.
They were giant.
Looked big on camera.
Yeah, they're giant. Yeah. They were, Brent, I mean, they were like 18 inches wide at the knees.
Those are Jodhpurs.
Well, I heard Sitka offers a slim fit wader.
Okay. Makes you look like 10 pounds trimmer.
I'm really just looking forward to see if First Light offers like a modern cut.
I tell you what, Clay, I started off the season with 6 pairs of waders, and we're whittled down to 2.
Wow.
It's pretty rough.
He's fly fishing waders is what he's using.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for him because I think those are leaking now.
That's well, those big waders you gave me, they leak pretty good. But listen to this hot tip, Austin. I'm going to introduce everybody here in just a minute. Hot tip. These waders were like soaked in the left foot, and we hunted the day before, and it was cold. And I mean, it took me 4 hours to get warm once I got home. It was. I was chilled.
It was cold.
I had to give Clay some coffee to warm him up while we were hunting.
Yeah, it worked. What I did the next day, because they didn't dry out, is I put a Ziploc bag over my foot. It worked great. Well, have you done that before?
I carry a roll of trash bags.
Trash bags.
Really?
Yeah, trash
bags. For leaky waders.
Yeah, and the great thing about the trash bag is you can tie it off the ankle, shin, the knee.
Crotch.
And crotch. Hey, I've gone that high with it.
Have you ever, like, what's that old thing you used to do with the pillowcases? Put them around your feet when you're a little kid, hop around? Like
a potato.
A potato sack race?
Yeah, potato sack race.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that with, like, two legs in the waders?
And, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, man. Waders. Waders is a whole other story. Hey. Once again, we have like legitimate guests on the render all over. Brent and I are the only ones that are the
curmudgeons.
Regulars here, the curmudgeons. Yeah. Yep. So Brent, we're gonna have to really behave, be on our best game because we have. I'm gonna go left to right to our left. Max Barta of Meat Eater. Max is probably should introduce Sean first because Max works with Sean Weaver,
right hand man
for Meat Eater, right hand man. But you're left handed.
Yeah.
Is that a slight to him? Keep moving.
Ooh,
Max is a photographer, producer, waterfowl hunter, 25 years old, fraternal twin.
And I'm learning.
Croc lover.
He eats a lot. He's a trim man, though. Eats a lot.
Puts
Max,
cheese on everything.
As always I read jealous. On his Instagram profile handle, he can make friends with a two before. And it's true. It's true. Max, it good true. To have you, man.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Bear Grease Render.
Max Barta.
I'm excited.
Max Barta sounds like a future president.
It's a good name.
Really? It's a strong name.
I haven't thought about that yet, but maybe. It's funny you bring that up because every time we roll into a new group of people, we're trying to do something, trying to get somewhere and get something accomplished. Max slows us down. And I always say, don't worry, Max is just running for president.
That's right.
So, because I'm just talking to people, getting to know them, being nice, trying to make them smile.
Yep.
You should say for the record here, I'm Max Barta and I endorse this message.
Yeah. Okay, I'll say it. My name is Max Barta and I endorse this message.
Oh, it's gonna be
legit.
South Dakota representative to your left, Sean Weaver of Meat Eater. Sean, you're an old pro on Bear Grease. You've not been on the render though.
Nope, not been on the render.
Sean drove. He drove to my house from Missouri. He was on his.
It's not that far.
100 day. Well, no. It was far for him because he drove from Utah to Missouri and then down to my house late one night to record that session that we did. So it's on.
It was a late night, but it was worth it.
It ended up being worth it. It was. You did really good. And so Sean works for Meat Eater. You've worked for Meat Eater for less than a year.
Less than a year, yeah. But we are currently, actually, this is our last duck hunt of the season, putting the final touches on the new show, Duck Lore.
Yeah.
Which will be part of the Meat Eater network.
Can we tell people how many shows there are? Is that a secret?
I don't think that's a secret.
The first season will be 6 episodes, and we're also filming the second season in the same year. Which will be 6 episodes.
So there are 12 episodes.
12 episodes, yeah.
And we can say that's why we're here right now.
That's why we're
here.
We
will later disclose where we're at.
Yeah.
Not yet, though.
No.
All entertainment is just drama. Drama and hooks. Okay? So you have a little drama, like this is a secret location, and then you tell them you're going to tell it later.
Foreshadowing.
So we'll tell you where we're at later.
Later, meaning like 30
when
minutes?
We get to our next guest. I'll tell you where we're at. No, it's great to have you, Sean. It's been awesome hunting with you. We're going to talk more about our hunt. To your left, Anne Marie DeRamus. Anne Marie, great to see you.
Clay, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
So Anne Marie is a commissioner, and this is the reason we have to be on our best behavior. You too, as well.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Anne Marie is a
and
commissioner
too.
Of a little organization they call the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. And so we've been here, Sean and I and Max have been here hunting with Anne Marie for the last 4 days.
Yes, sir.
5 days.
Mm-hmm. Four.
And she's been hosting our team here at kind of the family duck club, which has been super fun. Great to have you.
Hey, glad to be here. We've had a great time the past few days. Got our fair share of hunts in. Got you on your very first gadwall shoot, which, bravo. We're glad that you finally moved away from the mallard.
Yeah.
Although shooting mallards is a lot of fun, I will say that. But we did have a good shoot on the first day.
Yep.
Had a great hunt the second day. And anyway, I think we're going to get out there in the morning too before you guys head out.
Yeah, we'll talk more about our hunt. How long have you been a commissioner, Emery?
This is my third year.
So it's a 7-year term.
It is 7-year
term.
3 years
into a 7-year term.
That's right. And I serve with 6 other commissioners from around the state.
Yeah.
And one non-voting commissioner who is always the head of the biology and zoology department for the University of Arkansas,
gotcha.
Dr. Stephen Boupre. Got to give him a shout out.
Snake man.
That's right. He is a snake man.
Yeah, snake man. Tell me, describe how the commission works. Like, do most states have an appointed commission? Do we know that? The next guest I'm going to introduce is Austin Booth, the director of the Game and Fish. But that is a secret, and I'm not going to tell you that until
later.
Don't
tell them.
Well, I couldn't tell you exactly the number, but I do know there's many states where actually. So let me go back to what the commission does. Yeah. Essentially, we're a governing body who oversees the rules and regulation for all fish and wildlife in the state of Arkansas. So a lot of responsibility on our shoulders.
Right.
And in other states, I do know that some are still. Their rules and regulations are controlled by the legislature, correct, Austin? But for the most part, each state has their fish and wildlife agencies who determine that.
Yeah. And so tell me what would you say your main job is as a commissioner?
Hearing from the public, listening to the public, balancing science and public opinion in order to make the best decisions possible for our sportsmen and women throughout the state of Arkansas.
But primarily making regulations.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, and more than that, approving budget approvals. For instance, we just this last month approved for a boat ramp to be put in down in South Arkansas. So several other things that we do in regards to, you know, not just fish and wildlife, but infrastructure throughout the state. Yeah.
Awesome. Who are your favorite? I'm kidding. I can't ask you.
Favorite?
I was gonna ask some awkward question.
Were you gonna ask who would be like my ideal dinner party or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I was gonna ask who your other favorite commissioners were, but it was a joke.
All of them.
Yeah.
We have a really great group of commissioners. We're all friends. We all work great together, and I feel really, really lucky to serve on this panel with the group that we have.
Yeah. You know. It is interesting, and I'm not an expert on government, nor an expert on the way other state agencies work, but there are state government structures, where the legislature votes for wildlife regulations and laws, okay? And so that, to me, is a problem, because then whether our deer season is this date to this date, or our bear season is this to this, all of a sudden becomes a literal political issue that you vote on to the general public. And so people start to run on campaigns about wildlife, just like the New Jersey governor did when he said this is part of my campaign platform.
Did he get rid of bear season?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He said, we're going to shut down bear hunting in New Jersey. And he did it. And so because and I said this in the podcast, any type of government, somebody's going to have some reason why. You know, they don't like it.
Right.
And I take it he had never been bear hunting.
He just wanted to do it. Point being, having a commission, 7 people or 8 people that are making wildlife decisions, is usually really good. I mean, because these people are typically going to be people that are involved in wildlife management. And I would rather entrust that kind of stuff to 7 people that have some founding in the state rather than the general public. So that's just my 2 bits on state government, because my buddy's up in Michigan. So we work pretty closely with Bear Hunting Magazine, with the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association and the Michigan Bear Hunters Association. Super strong state agencies that raise tons of money. And basically they spend their life fighting anti-hunting legislation. And it's because they have that type of government. So anyway, it's just a fight. So love it.
And one of the many things that we have going for us in Arkansas is we have a great legislature. They strongly support the outdoors.
Yeah.
They understand the economic benefit to Arkansas that, you know, tourism brings, all the out-of-state hunters coming here, the out-of-state anglers. They know their communities just as well as we do, and they understand how in the natural state, outdoors is just in our veins. And having a commission that makes those decisions basically insulates us from outside political influence outside the state coming into the state. And and so it's not so much that we have a problem with the legislature here, but it kind of insulates us from out-of-state influence. And, couldn't be happier with the legislature that we have.
I agree with that, Austin. Actually, there's several legislators who are hunters and anglers, too.
So absolutely.
You bet.
Something to be proud of.
I was with them this afternoon.
Good.
Clay, did you introduce that fine man?
Hey, you keep your chair, buddy.
Stay in your lane over there.
We take 20 minutes on introductions.
Okay.
I'm not like boss.
You're not president yet, Max.
Okay. You. Okay.
Friendly reminder.
Max would do that. You're such a nice guy. You're afraid everybody's going to be left out. Wait till I get to this guy. To Anne Marie's left. Austin Booth, the director of the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. You're like a regular on the Bear Grease now.
If regular means two, then you're right.
No, good to have you, man. Great to have you.
Now, if I get Crocs, will I upgrade from regular to emeritus?
There's no place to go but up.
Yep.
I feel like I need to go change into Crocs.
Well,
I'm embarrassed.
If my family was here, if my wife was here, I couldn't wear these.
She don't like them.
Well, I might have to defend her. And you can't win a fight wearing
the volcano.
No, she loves them.
Right?
Yeah, you just
look.
I mean, if let's say something goes wrong between me and Austin, you know?
It's going, it's coming.
And we go fist to cuff.
Right.
He's going to beat me to the ground because, for a couple of reasons.
Well, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that's not going to be the
case. Is the other reason the knuckle dragging Marine? Because I've heard him say that before.
You know, I'm pretty wiry, but, you know. Austin, you've been duck hunting a lot, though.
I have. Yeah,
you've had some good duck hunts.
I've been on some great hunts this year.
Yeah,
yep.
We got a lot of ducks in the state right now. That's what I hear.
Yes, we're loaded full with hunters, loaded full with ducks. Still down from the long term average, but
duck hunters or ducks?
Ducks,
ducks.
Okay. Compared to where we were last month, a whole lot of ducks in the state right now.
We just learned Sean and I were in a boat with Luke Naylor a couple of days ago, and he was describing to us the aerial counting.
Yes.
I just turned to Luke and I said, how many mallard ducks are in Arkansas right now? And he just spouted off. I think he said 530,000.
532,000 is what
532,000.
I can't count that.
And then, and I said, okay, how do you know that? And he described to us how they
bring a cauldron and an airplane and they sprinkle like a weird concoction of like gar blood and antifreeze and just like,
oh wow.
And no.
I was like, man, this is not what he said.
No,
they're, can you describe how they count those? Do you know?
It was transects where they fly random lines across the Delta and they get a count on that line and then extrapolate out over those different transects over the square mileage of the Delta, how many ducks that would be.
That's amazing. And I asked him, I said, how confident are you in that number? And he may have been joking, but he said plus or minus 150,000. But
I don't think he was joking. Maybe he was, but
he was not joking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty amazing. Are we doing weekly counts during duck season?
No, we do a handful throughout the season, but they're not weekly.
Are they monthly?
No, it's based on the splits.
Okay.
But there are other states that do them, but obviously this is Arkansas. We
do it best.
We do it best for sure.
It's entirely based on places that are kind of epicenters, right?
Yeah. For example, how many states would you say do that?
Well, the Illinois River Valley, I believe, gets flown every week. The Missouri River in South Dakota gets flown.
And North Dakota weekly.
North Dakota as well, weekly.
Okay.
Just kind of depends where you're at, but places that are, I guess, historic migration routes and also epicenters of waterfowlers.
Okay.
Typically get flown.
Yeah, that's really neat. To Austin's left, Brent Reeves.
Chick.
One and the only.
Good to have you, Brent. So Brent drove down from where he lives. So I did say where we're at. We're in southeast Arkansas in the Delta. I said we were at Anne Marie's family duck camp, which is true, but that is located in southeast Arkansas near Stuttgart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Stuttgart.
Resident duck capital of the world.
Stuttgart.
Close to where actually Brent used to hunt quite a bit.
Just up the road.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you hunted 10, 15 miles from Stuttgart.
Oh, Radell. No. Radell from here is probably, what is it, 8 miles?
Yeah.
9 miles?
Yeah.
Yeah, not far.
Great.
Hunting the same ducks. It looked just like them.
I have a question for Brent, just so I can have a baseline for your formal attire.
Yes.
You're wearing Crocs this time. The last render, you had a zip tie on your overalls.
Yeah.
Have you upgraded to a button?
The button. This is the button.
All right.
I was wearing those yesterday, and I thought, man, I'm glad these didn't come out in the rotation tomorrow.
They think you only had one pair.
I only got one pair.
So do you have to cut off the zip tie every time?
Oh, no. It's on the side.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, no, it's zip tie. All right. We were talking the other day, a friend of mine, I don't know if I said this on the last render or not, but a friend of mine who I met during bear baiting season last year, Corey Eisenhower, brought me a mess of squirrels, and I was talking to him on the phone. I hung up the phone, and Alexa says, what were you saying? I said, well, my friend Corey's going to bring me some squirrels. She said, did you say he was going to bring you a mess of squirrels? My wife's from Texas. I said, yeah, my friend Corey's bringing me a mess of squirrels. She said, I swear, it's like I've been living on an 11-year episode of Hee Haw with no commercials. Sometimes she wonders how she got to where she's at.
Every time I see her, I wonder how she got where she's at, because she's such a wonderful woman.
She is.
And she...
She has a taste for roughness.
Oh, my goodness. Sean, walk us through our waterfowl hunts. And let me just tell people, I have been immersed into the Arkansas waterfowl world for the last month and a half, more than any time in my entire life. Okay. I've quickly become very opinionated, very informed, very knowledgeable. And like all my other waterfowl friends, pretty much know what to do.
Okay. I mean, you know how to blow a duck call now.
Yeah. Yes. Very good duck caller, of course.
Excellent duck caller, the best.
No, I have. It's kind of interesting how this all came about, but I was bound to end up in Arkansas duck hunting just because it's, I mean,
yeah.
I've lived so close my whole life, and it just wasn't something that we didn't have any connections here. And then to come here and to experience it, and more than just experience it, to see the culture of it. And then it's one thing to hear from somebody from Stuttgart or somebody from down here, like you three, how cool it is and the culture here. The real data point that I listened to that was like, hey, these folks ain't lying, was Sean Weaver, who has been like, Clay, this is the place for waterfowl culture.
Even last summer, when we started planning doing a hunt together, it kind of blew my mind a little bit. I was like, you live in Arkansas. We've got to get you into the Delta and do some duck hunting.
Yeah.
We have to. And yeah, so this week's hunts have been...
Before we go there, so we went into Stuttgart and we went to Max Prairie Wings, which is an event all of its own. Austin's eyes are rolling in the back of his head. Max, tell us about going to Max Prairie Wings.
So ever since I started waterfowl hunting, we didn't have any like great waterfowl stores up in North Dakota. And me and my dad, I was shopped on Max Prairie Wings. And this was 10,
Were
12.
You named after the Max?
No, it just occurred to me. M-A-C-K-S and M-A-X.
Oh, man. That would have been
but,
cool.
Yeah, anyway, so like growing up, me and my dad would always shop online at Max Prairie Wings.
Okay.
And I was such a big fan of it because, like, every time a Max package showed up, I was like, I know what that's going to be. It's going to be decoys.
So when we pulled up in the parking lot, we're walking in, you were like, I've been waiting 15 years for this.
Yeah. Literally. Oh,
he had his phone out. He disappeared in the store. We didn't find him for like 45 minutes.
I literally walked down every single aisle.
when I was like,
I think all you bought was chapstick, though. That's it.
Every duck hunter needs it.
Well, when I said it's time to go, he goes, I have not walked down every aisle yet. I was like, okay.
it was fun. Max brought the energy that I needed when I walked into Max Prairie Wings. But so we went there, and you know, this is kind of a waterfowl epicenter. You walk in, they're all waterfowlers. You know, you just kind of realize you're in this like hub of seriousness for this thing. Well, then we drive down the street just within sight to go see Jimbo Ronquist.
Down the street, you mean on the other side of the parking lot?
We actually had to get on the two-lane road and back in. Right. But yes, like right there. They told me we're going to go by Jimbo's shop. And I had only met him a couple of days, but we were at a duck camp. And they said, we're going to go to a shop. I am envisioning a wood shop where people make duck calls. Like a small metal building.
Like elves.
Maybe with a couple of... Yeah, maybe some elves. You know, some duck mounts maybe and a little bit of this and that. Man, it is a straight up like beautiful,
it is beautiful
facility. Very, I mean, the architecture of it's super cool. And it's the R&T World Headquarters.
Yeah.
And you go in there and there's a, I don't know if it's a restaurant, but there's a bar there. And there were just guys hanging out. I mean, just crowded with people. I didn't know anything like that existed. Like, what I wanted to have was, like, the Squirrel and Coon Club up in Northwest Arkansas, where everybody came and did that. I just don't think we're as cool as the waterfowl guys. But so I say all that to say there's so much built down here around this culture, which is so cool. But
I would come to your squirrel club.
You'd come up there?
I would. I'm a squirrel hunter now.
You are?
Yeah.
Anne-Marie's a squirrel hunter. Yeah, we went squirrel hunting the second day. Yeah, before we get to the ducks, we got to talk about the squirrels.
Squirrels priority.
I think it is.
Squirrel time.
Okay.
Let's squirrel time. Squirrels.
No.
We'll come back to the squirrels.
Yeah,
I'm totally
back
distracted
to the
squirrels. tell us about our hunts or about Stuttgart.
I think it is worth mentioning with the Max and R&T that it also demonstrated how small the waterfowl community can get and how you can be just one person removed from pretty much everybody. Because we ran into several friends.
Yeah.
And like, you know, someone that Max has known since he was a little kid in the R&T shop. And I ran into a friend in Max, and it gets small quick.
Yeah.
But no, our hunts, you know, we started off here on Anne-Marie's, which was great, and kicked it off with a cypress hunt, which alone was like worth the price.
In a big, reservoir, basically a man-made like.
Mm-hmm.
That had big cypress trees scattered all throughout it.
Yep. And it was a gadwall hole.
Yes, it was.
You know what? We gadwalled Clay.
Yes.
That's what we did. We had to diversify his duck harvest. He only killed mallards.
The joke was, Brent, that I had only killed mallards, which is a true story. I had only killed mallards my whole waterfowl career.
That's how long now?
Yeah, 3 days.
You know. and
you know, at Clay's
so
Duck Club at West Fork, Arkansas. Yeah. That's all they kill.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we killed several gadwalls, which broke my streak of mallards.
Right.
And so, you know, the joke became that they gadwalled me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know the mallard is the king. That's been established. But mm-hmm. it was super fun. It actually was one of my I'm not going to say it's better than the rice hunt, but it was fun. I'd like to go back there. It was fun.
What I liked about that hunt, it was basically Clay and I in one cluster of trees, the other Anne-Marie and Sean and the other camera guy in another cluster of trees. And it was kind of like Clay and I versus them.
Oh, yeah.
And we would shoot the ducks on the left side. They would shoot the ducks on the right side. But it was just so much fun just to gab back and forth and just overall great time.
We did pretty good.
What was
Clay
his,
learned a few things.
Max, mm-hmm. give me a quick estimate on his shell to duck ratio.
Better than my shell to squirrel ratio.
Okay, so I will say, Clay likes to shoot. It doesn't matter if they're at 15 yards or 50 yards.
I have to defend Clay's honor for a minute here, though. Because
are you wearing goggles?
You got a double. That was awesome.
Yeah, I was getting to that point. Clay had a
dead
nice
eye Clay
pair come in on the left side and dumped them both.
Put on a clinic, dead. Brent.
Yeah. Wait. Run it to the plug. Clinic. That's what we say.
Sean. Clay turned over and he's like, did you guys shoot? Like, no.
I was like, why did those ducks fall so quick?
Sean, are you calling a double two ducks with two shots or two ducks with one shot?
Two ducks with two shots.
Two shots, yeah.
It's two shots.
Two for two.
Well, yeah, it does take a little bit of time to understand when you're sky busting and when you're not. And that is still a little unclear to me.
Out of state.
I think it was the very first shot of the day, I think, was Clay trying to sky bust a duck. Is that right? I will say,
yeah, that is correct. Yeah. I will say I appreciate that when Clay doesn't hit a duck, he turns to me and says, Now, was that sky busting?
Or was that too far?
Was that too far?
Should I not have done that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I respect that because he's trying to learn for sure. Yeah, it's not like he's just willy-nilly burning boxes of shells.
I just don't like to let opportunities slip through your fingers, man.
I hear that.
We really, really threw Clay off, though, Sean, when we started our gadwall duck calls. He was like, why are you guys just going meep, meep, meep? Meep.
Oh, yeah. he got on me. He goes, that's not how my boys call ducks.
I said, that's not how me and Jim call ducks. I'm not a fan of the gadwall. They just got no heart in their call. You know, the mallet is like, quack, 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 quack.
It's like they're stuck in traffic.
In the gadwall's like,
stuck in traffic.
Yeah. Beep. That's about what they sound like. Beep, 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 beep.
Meep, 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 meep.
Yeah, I was like, Sean, you're never going to call a gadwall in with that. Trust me. I mean,
you've never done it.
Okay, so we had the gadwall shoot. Maybe I'll let Anne-Marie tell about the next hunt at what y'all call the Mayor's Field.
Yeah, the Mayor's Field.
Yeah.
Because it is it's a field located across the street from the self-proclaimed mayor of this area's house. So
nice.
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
You can see his house from where we're hunting.
Yeah, we could. So pretty
long ways away.
Pretty straightforward on our naming of our duck holes. But we hunted in a rice field. Very, very windy day. We had a north wind that was what, like 20 miles per hour?
At least.
Like, I mean, yeah, it was super duper windy. And we have a blind there on the corner, but I don't always like to hunt out of a blind. I feel like sometimes they can flare off of it. So actually, we went about 150 yards west of where that blind is and set up all behind the trees. We were sitting on the ground. And
we knew there were a bunch of ducks in there.
Because we did. We scouted the day
before. We had seen just mallards just piling in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they wanted in there bad.
We got a beautiful watch the night before scouting. Yeah. It was a good scout.
Yeah.
So go in, have our shoot, and we're done by 9 o'clock. Had a few teal light in the hole. So that was a really cool hunt.
I think a cool thing to mention there is that we were hunting them like turkeys, sitting under the base of a tree, sitting on
sitting on a little pad.
Yeah, it was fun. We're calling in a lot of pairs. It wasn't like big groups of mallards.
No.
Well, it's so late in the season that they are, you know, paired up right now. So that's typically how you're going to see them.
Yeah.
So
I don't think I scout busted any on that hunt.
No, they came right in. They floated in.
Did you shoot?
I shot.
Yeah, Clay shot.
Okay, some clarification.
Yeah.
and a teal.
Mm-hmm.
I killed my limit of mallards and a teal, didn't I?
Yep, you did.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and the teal, the teal shot was not something just to skip over. But
no way.
It was pretty good. Yeah. And so the third day, we went to Biomeda.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, Sean.
What is Biomeda?
I don't know. What did you tell me?
Biomeda. Well, I think it's been in Sean's dreams since he was a little boy because he was all googly-eyed from the moment that we stepped foot into the parking lot.
Oh yeah,
he's like Max at Prairie Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much.
It is.
Sean about
Max at his own store.
Yeah, Max at Max.
Yeah.
When you think of Arkansas duck hunting, obviously you think about flooded green timber, and when you think about places to hunt in Arkansas, you think of Biomeda.
Mm-hmm.
You do.
I mean, ultimately, the reason a place like Stuttgart has its reputation is places like Biomeda. And, I've wanted to hunt there a long, long time. I was really, really excited to make it happen. Was excited to just get to be out there. But ultimately, the third day was pretty rough as far as hunting
Tell
goes.
Just give us a little rundown of the first day with the boat and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A little drama. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, if you follow my Instagram, and ultimately once you see Duck Lore come out, you'll find that I've had boat problems beyond all possibility this year. I mean, it's been unbelievable. November boat motor took a pretty much catastrophic failure. It took well over a month to get fixed, and then thought it was fixed, had it run good for about a week, maybe, Max,
if that.
Yeah, like I mean, really, it would seem as though in Biomeda this week we had another catastrophic failure. Went to go turn out of the channel.
We're in flooded timber.
Yeah, we're in flooded timber.
Like right in the heat of the moment of trying to get back to where we're going. And
trying to beat people to spots. Yeah.
running up a cut.
We'd been bumping people out in holes.
No.
I was wearing actual boots, so I was able to bully a few people. No, that's not true. That didn't happen.
You were wearing Crocs.
We're running up a channel, and we're going to cut out of it, and shuts off. Go to turn the key, and nothing. Like, literally no power. Switch batteries, do a computer reset. It's a Neofi motor. And she's toast.
So luckily we had Amory's boat out there, the Sea Witch,
and the Flying Squirrel.
We've been trying to name it that day.
The Flying Squirrel, the Sea Witch. Trying to think.
Sean Salvation would be a good boat.
Yeah, I gave Amory some advice on naming stuff.
Oh.
You never want to name anything with more than two syllables,
which made it complicated. Actually,
yeah, and a one syllable is better, but for a boat, you can go two.
Yeah.
But anyway, because there was a couple that were thrown in, and I was doing my syllable test, and I was like, nah, that's not going to stick. Yeah. I mean, you can name it that, it's not going to stick. Got to be two syllables, one or two syllables.
That's sick.
Clay, do you know what boat stands for?
Boat stands for?
Yeah.
Nope.
Bust out another thousand.
Oh.
Hey, I believe it.
That's not the only boat trouble from Sean. That we
have. At this point, I've got like four boats then.
So the short version of this story is we went ahead and just parked the boats, and we were close enough to our hole that we walked into where we were going to hunt,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't kill a duck that morning. So we hunted by Amita and did not kill a duck, saw a lot of ducks, had two ducks fly into the hole. Early
that I could have taken shots on, but I felt like they're irresponsible, even though they're well within shooting range.
Yeah,
it was just kind of low light. I had just loaded my gun. I guess I should have been more ready, but it felt like I just didn't. I felt like I was shooting into the abyss because down there in that green timber, it's dark in there.
Yeah,
and when they hit the water, they just disappeared.
Yeah,
they're all of a sudden just not there. They're just part of the black. Even though it was legal shooting light.
And then when that happens right at legal shooting light, you think this is going to happen a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really take a chance. Yeah. And then the only other chance we had the whole day. And I'm gonna tell you guys something about waterfowlers that you may not even know about yourself.
Here we go.
Okay. Because this bird comes in, and he just flies right over the top of me, but above the canopy. I shoot at the bird twice. Boom, boom. Used two of my 15 shells that I could have at Biomeda. So I had 13 left.
I'm glad to hear that.
And, and I miss the bird. And then I go, did I sky bust that bird, John?
He did.
And he was like, absolutely. And he was like, Clay, that was a working bird. Okay. So it was a total misjudgment. I mean, I just thought, this is my chance. Mm-hmm.
You're just
take
too
my
excited.
Chance.
Just too excited.
I shot at this bird above the canopy, missed it. Austin, this is what all waterfowlers do. You've done it. I mean, I guarantee you, all of you have done it. Brent's done it. Amory's done it. The one bird that you sky bust is the one that you were going to kill. Even though 150 other birds had done the exact same thing and didn't land in the decoys. Because Sean's like, that bird was working. That bird was working.
There's a lot of birds that bird was working.
Clay, you blew it.
Here's what's bad when that happens is when you got somebody in the party that does that, then there's actually, or one duck comes in by itself and somebody throws up and shoots, and there's
right behind it, 90 behind it, straight up.
That is hard to understand when you're supposed to shoot. And
oh yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
It's very nuanced, and it's all about how you feel and what you are used to watching those birds do, and it changes day to day because some days you get that one or two here or there that do pop in and finish, and it's like that's all we're gonna get. The big flocks aren't gonna do it on certain days, and so you got to take those singles and pairs. And then there's other days where, like, your best strategy, if the birds are really working, really doing it, letting those singles or pairs peel out, keep moving, land, whatever, and let the back end keep finishing. But it all just changes on a day-to-day
basis.
Man,
if you got a new guy with you, you better put him on
a short rope.
I mean, I need a short rope with stuff like that.
Well, like, last weekend we were hunting the White River. Had him working in the timber for a little bit, but then 8 o'clock rolls around, and we're shooting them on the dip. Mm. So not going full Clay Newcomb and shooting them above the trees.
But like, what does that mean on the dip? Like they start to duck in, but don't fully commit?
Right.
Gotcha.
And had kind of a slow morning, but killed six mallards me and the group, and then went to Moist Soil Unit that afternoon and shoot him in the decoy. So mm-hmm. only just a couple miles from each other, but different time of day, you know, calendar year, it changes.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store, or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
So the second day, and we can tell this story pretty quick. The second day we went back to Biomeda.
I had to get a mallard in Biomeda.
Yeah.
I had to.
So we walk in. It took us a while. We went to a walking area, walked in, tried to find water, made a big loop because we didn't find water as quick as we thought we would.
My legs are sore right now.
Yeah, we were pulling.
We walked.
I was trying to convince him to bring less stuff. He wouldn't listen. But we finally find water and we get back in there. We found a nice hole and a hole means usually where timber is falling over. I wouldn't have known that. Like, why is there holes in timber? What's that mean? Usually it's where a tree is falling over and there's an opening in the canopy where the ducks can get down. They're wanting to get in these in this
deadfalls,
flooded timber.
Deadfalls. Much, yeah.
Wind thrown.
Yeah. And basically we, you know, called a few birds, nothing serious at all. And then we're done. Like we decided we're leaving, and that's where you can tell me what happened.
Well, I will say that we walked around in that area till we found where we kind of jumped some birds and saw some birds working too. So there was birds kind of in that area, and we were seeing some close-ish, but nothing really like wanting to come decoy and check out what was going on. Dead calm and cloudy, which is like worst case scenario for duck hunting, especially in the timber.
Especially in the timber.
And
Morale was low.
Yeah, I was low. I was kind of at that point where, like,
though, Max.
I was kind of at that point where it was like, you know what? It just isn't in the cards. Let's go home. I'll have to come back and get that mallard. And it must have been our splashing as we turned to walk out and feet kicking and all of a sudden.
We're just talking. I mean, we're talking like normal voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just BSing. And no one behind a tree or anything.
We didn't even have our
pulling,
guns out.
Pulling a jet sled, guns on the shoulder.
And Drake Mallard got too close.
What happened, Austin, is that we just kind of see some birds out of the corner of the eye. And they're kind of cupping up a little bit, but they're. Sean says they were in the canopy. They weren't.
They were.
He was
if
even.
If I had shot and missed, it would have been sky busting.
Hold on a second. I'm going to defend myself here.
They came. Okay. They were. Let's say they were in the top of the canopy. I learned my lesson though. I let you shoot first because I just was like, are we shooting at these ducks or not? Because I'm not going to be the one that's going to sky bust them. So I had the gun up, and when I heard you shot, I just unloaded. Boom, boom, boom. Shot three times. Yep. And you clipped one.
Yeah, I clipped him. Broke his wing, fell 40 yards away.
And he was off to the races.
Yeah. Yeah, when I saw it, it hit the water and just started swimming. And man, I was going to tackle it if it took it. I took off running as fast as I could after that duck.
It was anything but what, like, I guess I would consider, success on a normal hunt, right? Like I go just like any duck hunter does, but I want them fluttering, hanging over decoys. Sure, sure. But ultimately I got that one mallard. Now it's kind of like it's gonna have to be a little bit of a personal vendetta deal to come back and actually learn some stuff about this place.
Yeah.
Because
back.
It's unbelievable. The scale of it is hard to comprehend.
Hmm.
When you look at it on a map, you can go, oh, you know, that's 10 miles there or whatever the heck it is, you know. But when you get out in that timber and realize how far 200 yards or 300 yards is in that kind of environment, whereas 200 300 yards in South Dakota on a lake, or you know, even a mile on a lake in South Dakota, like ducks flare from a mile, like from gunshots and whatever else. Out here, you can have so many groups of hunters stuffed in a mile, and like you have no clue what's going on a mile away. Not a darn clue.
Yeah.
And I can see how guys spend their whole lives learning that timber. I mean, really, like picking it apart.
17,000 acres of flooded timber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as a camera guy on that hunt, I see everything in a whole different perspective. You guys were seeing it as duck hunting, and I was sitting back here like, this feels like a big game hunt. Like, everyone was talking quiet, moving slow, and it was
picking
like
our
a,
way
yeah, pretty much
trees.
A spot and stock. And like we said, like, we just need to get that one mallard. And after the previous, or the day before, all the troubles and getting skunked, it was like, we all want that mallard. We all have one goal, and it's that mallard.
Yeah, yeah, that was the thing. We could have gone... Mm-hmm. We could have stayed here and probably killed a lot of ducks. Mm-hmm. But we went back. I wanted to stay here. Just for the record. No, hey, that's a good place to start talking about this last podcast. We talked about these Green Tree Reservoirs, really dug in deep. Austin, did we cover it? If somebody listened to that podcast, would they come away with the info that you feel like they would need to understand the problem, understand what's going to be done, understand the challenges?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot to it. It's
or what would you like to even add to it or expound on? Like, as you were listening, you're like, man, I'd like to talk more about that.
Well, this render is appropriate for it because, I mean, obviously these guys heard the first bear grease, then heard the second render, but now here, seeing Biomeda, smelling Biomeda, watching the sunlight, the sunrise come through the trees, having the boat ride in, y'all understand it. And it's almost a Arkansas spiritual connection to those red oaks with water on them and green heads coming through them. Having you guys here to talk about it first and then to see it, I think, is the most powerful connection, because it's not just a resource that we're conserving, it's something that's really important to the character of our state. If the second bear grease was incomplete in any way, it's hearing these guys talk about what they've seen that's kind of made it complete.
It was interesting being out there to see a lot of dead timber. And, you know, I have no frame of reference. So I might have just gone out there and just been like, well, this is just what it looks like. One day we were there with somebody who had been there a lot. And he was like, man, he said, look at all these leaning trees. And I just thought leaning trees were normal. But he was like, those leaning trees are an indication of a root system that is compromised. And those trees aren't supposed to be leaning like that. And you just look through this forest and there was a lot of leaning trees, a lot of dead trees. And so, I mean, you know, the thing is real, you know.
Yeah. Well, and we use the analogy wet feet a lot, talking about the tree's roots. Now, that has limited persuasion with two men wearing Crocs right now.
It's all perspective.
Wet feet, not men in Crocs. But anyways, y'all saw all the boating canals, all the ditches we have in there. Well, due to increased rainfall, this October, November was the first time in 3 years that it's been dry enough for us to get in there just to clean out those ditches, clean out the canals. Wow. 3 years. So we've got some challenges on our hands, and it's an important part of the state that's at risk, but we're going to do what we can when we can.
Yeah. Anne-Marie, what'd you think? What stood out to you in what we discussed or anything you'd like to add to it?
I mean, I think that our director, Austin Booth, put it all very well, that it's an important part of our character here in Arkansas, having these green tree reservoirs. I mean, you don't get anything like it. It's funny because Sean and I were talking earlier. It's crazy that 8 hours north of here, ducks land in dry fields.
Right.
And then you get down here and they're landing in water. And to
it's
top
the same
it off,
ducks too.
Yeah. And they're flying through trees and landing in water. Yeah. It's just unbelievable. So it's a big part of, yes, our state, our heritage, the whole flyway in general. Mm. Something that we can't stand to lose, and we have to do whatever it takes and whatever is within our control to help save these
trees. I thought that was a good point that Austin made on the podcast, was that there's lots of reasons why, I mean, a system this complex, it's not just one, it's usually not just one issue. It's usually multiple things.
That's right.
And there's only so many things that you can cleanly touch and manipulate. There's some things that are just, there's issues with, just other stuff that's hard to manage. So
that's
the point being, this is what we can do. This is what we're going to do. There's other more longer term issues that we're going to deal with. You know
what Luke Naylor said in your last podcast? He said, wildlife management is a mixture of science and art.
Yep.
All goes hand in hand.
And if I could just add one thing to what I thought was, poignant about the last podcast, was that you have Bobby, our chairman, who's talking about a generation prior to him, right? The Rex Hancock era.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about the generation before him. Anne-Marie and I, you know, we're looking to Bobby, who's a generation before us, and we're making decisions about the generation after us right now.
Yeah.
And probably the generation after that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just one snapshot of what, you know, duck hunting in Arkansas is. It spans four generations just in the context of one decision. And that's what it means to the state. And that's why it's a good story to tell, but also one to be committed to for the long term, because that's what it takes.
Bobby talked about Rex Hancock and what he did up at the Cache River. And, you know, I obviously heard the name Rex Hancock before, but I didn't know the whole story. And so that was really educational for me to hear. And honestly, really rings a bell with what we're going through right now and the decisions that we're having to make.
You know, Luke brought up that he introduced a phrase to me that I wouldn't have known, humans dimension research.
True.
Which I had to look that up. He said it in the podcast, and I just shook my head like I knew what he was talking about. And I went back home and looked up what that meant. And humans dimension research is a field of study, academic study, where people try to understand how humans value natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, talking about Rex Hancock and the multiple interests that went into the Cache River. I mean, there was That was a big amount of energy being put into channelizing the cash.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the economy of Arkansas would have been at stake. So there would have been farmers that would have been like, hey, we want barges running up and down the cache to take our crops to market. There would have been all this stuff, but somebody had to stand up for wildlife, for wild places, for a way of life, and had to really like put some teeth into it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was interesting that Humans Dimension research just that everybody values the land differently. When we toured a farm this week where this guy had basically just, it was like, I described it, it was like Jurassic Park, but for ducks, just in terms of like all the things that they were doing, and we were driving through seeing ducks, and it was just an incredible place.
Right.
And I had the thought while we were there, like he's trying to turn this place back into a wetland essentially for ducks. Most of the world is going the other direction. Like a wetland is not valuable to you unless you value waterfowl. So just this whole idea of that, when people look at a piece of land, nobody's thinking the same thing.
Right.
Why that land has value and how it should be used. And that's why we have to have these strong opinions, strong science, strong conviction, perseverance, dedication. There's just a lot that goes into saving wildlife in 2022.
Amen to that.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it is.
You know, on that note, talking about Rex Hancock specifically, it was an interesting bit for me in the podcast where it's mentioned how he's like this ordinary guy that, you know, fights for this like fundamental ecological component of the area. When you look at waterfowl over the last 100 years, you see this a lot where, relatively speaking, nobodies, so to speak, just average guys come along and impact great, great things to the resource. You know, Ding Darling wasn't a nobody, but now he's like considered the, you know, father of the National Wildlife Refuge System. And ultimately, he was a cartoonist that was like making fun of politics and ends up creating, you know, okay, huge portion of the cache is National Wildlife Refuge. You know, Ding Darling's father of the National Wildlife Refuge System. And you have these guys that just come along, like see this kind of like, this is the hill I'll die on moment of their life. Of like, they know it takes only one man, but it's one person sees there's fundamentally something wrong and they have to stand, you know, for what they believe.
It's happened a lot of times, hasn't it?
And we owe those singular people, we owe them a lot over the years.
Mr. Bobby said he couldn't imagine this part of Arkansas if the whole Cache River had been channelized. No. Like how much it would have changed the flyway, how much it would have changed the system. And just so, those things are so
critical. I've personally seen part of the stretch that was before it kind of got stopped. There's, you know, small stretch of the cache that was channelized.
4 miles.
And it's it like instantly makes you disheartened when you look at it. You're like, oh, this is what it would all been. It's a line, you know.
You know, so much of the last 150 years in this country, we were trying to get out of this place being a wilderness. You know, a place that was uninhabitable. Mm-hmm. I mean, like we talked about in the first one about how much of Arkansas literally would have been uninhabitable. I mean, because of flooding, and then you know, so man has always been in this. You know, struggle to make nature more consistent and more manageable. And but some of this waterfowl stuff, we need to go back the other direction. So anytime you're going against the current of kind of the modern trends, you know, it can be an uphill battle. John, what stood out? Anything stand out to you in the podcast?
There's so many things.
All the waterfowlers have been like, Clay, this is the best Bear Grease podcast you've ever done. And I'm like, of course it was, because you love waterfowl.
Hey, it was a great podcast. Very informational, entertaining, educational, the whole bit.
You may be a little bit biased.
I may be a little bit biased. I know a few people on there.
Just a minute ago, Anne-Marie had mentioned the 8 hours north of here, ducks feeding in dry fields, then here they're being in the timber. It really shows how... Well, one, how these birds adapt as they travel down the flyway and back up the flyway. But two, also, like, how important it is to understand the whole system from start to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, as I was producing this podcast, and just gathering information, the evidence is so clear of what needs to be done. It was almost like, well, this is a no-brainer. There's no story here because this is what needs to be done. What's the challenge, Austin? Like, why?
Yeah.
What could make it fail?
Well, I'm very sympathetic to that position because everybody in Arkansas, in this part of the state anyways, they live 305 days a year waiting for the other 60. That's not just duck hunters. That's gas stations. Mm. That's grocery stores. That's beds and breakfasts. That's restaurants. Yeah. And so to look at a resource and think it's dying, there's a whole lot of reasons that you don't want to believe that. We're also not looking at kind of like what we talked about earlier. We don't have the luxury of like single cause problems. It's really easy to sit here in 2022 and be like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. But you go back 5 years ago, you go back 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, we've learned a great deal about red oak dormancy, learned a great deal about what standing water versus sheet flow does to trees. We've had a immense increase in the rainfall that we get. So we're at a luxury right here and right now of information that I'm not willing to look back on years prior and fault guys for not having and for fault them for not believing like, oh, this is going to get better. This is going to get better. You know, the drainage will be better. We won't get as much rain next year. But looking forward to what could make this all not work out, it's going to come down to whether it's dry enough when we need it to be dry to put the work in and whether we have public support for the forest management and for the infrastructure that we need to put in.
So how would public support, like how would that, like what would a group of people do that would cause that not to work? I'm just trying to understand that.
Well, yeah, that's a great question.
Just raise Cain so much that it just causes problems for
that's
you guys
right.
to do it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, for so many years, people were used to, Balmita or Hurricane, you know, opening weekend of duck season, there's going to be water in there, sticking with tradition. And now we can't guarantee that because we never know what the weather's going to hold for us.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really difficult to grasp. That's the last thing. I know it was said last time that none of us, you know, want that to happen. This is, you know, we wish that we were not in this situation, but we are. And we have to adapt and change and do what is necessary to save the resource.
I think that Mother Nature's answer in systems is an answer to variability. And that really the only constant in life is change, that things mm-hmm. change. And you just can't deny that this has changed. You can't deny that the Prairie Pothole region has changed. You can't deny that there's all these man-made factors, whether it's power plants or the spread of corn farther west and farther north and changes of water quality and go down the line of all the things that affect a duck. And all those things are happening in synchronization while also then like you throw the cherry on top that you have a dying forest. Like to be frank, like there's a lot already going against Arkansas with those other things I mentioned. When you start looking at Lake Sakakawea in North Dakota last year on the Missouri River, a 100-some-mile long reservoir didn't freeze till almost February.
So it held a lot of ducks longer.
Yeah.
So it's a complex issue.
It's a very complex issue. But to come back to your point, like there's things you can alter and you can change.
Can I say something?
Sure.
I haven't said something in a long time. So
raise your hand proper. I'll call it. Okay, Max.
I'm Max and I endorse this message.
Before I listened to this podcast, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know there's a problem down here. And maybe that's me being out of state and not knowing about other state issues. Maybe that's just me having a closed mind and just worrying about my own state or just simply not listening to what people had to say. But I listened to the podcast and I was like, there's no way that's happening. No way. Because like I always...
That Clay Nuke is full of drama.
I just always thought this great, awesome area was always going to stay great. And spending 2 days in the area, it was just like, yeah, I can definitely see the problem. I can definitely see the issues. And I think people need to open their ears and just work, like Sean said, worry about the whole dang flyway from the breeding grounds all the way to the wintering grounds.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'd add two things to that, Max.
Yeah.
Y'all went to Biomeda, and from a forest management perspective and a public opportunity perspective, the goal with Biomeda is to keep it from becoming like other wildlife management areas that we have.
Yeah.
So if y'all were in the woods and y'all had somebody pointing out, you know, dead or irreversibly dying red oaks with extreme basal swelling at Biomeda, we can take you to some other places that'll make you sick, just sick to your stomach.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Hickory gray hurricanes were dying from the inside out. Yeah. So it's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
But if like that's the rain cloud, the silver lining is like, you know, we announced some of our water level management changes on September 3rd of 21. Feedback's been fantastic. I never ever would have thought that we'd have the support that we've gotten since then, because people are invested in the resource. We have a very unified commission. The hunters are starting to see the change in the resource. You know, we had lots of public meetings this summer trying to get people out in the woods when there's leaves on the trees to see what the trees look like in the summer when they're dead or irreversibly dying. We're in a really good place right now as a state to recognize the problem that we've been talking about for a long time, but now one that we're ready to move out on.
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
You know, I think this whole issue is just making hard decisions for conservation and wildlife and habitat is something that is going to happen in more places than just waterfowl. Mm-hmm. I mean, undeniable that something is happening with historic patterns of climate, like weather has been wild, waterfall has been wild. This place is changing. And you know, whether it's just a little blip, I don't know. But in my lifetime, this place has changed. And I'm not saying this place as in, I'm talking about planet Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's changing. So I think what you guys are facing, what the state of Arkansas is facing about making significant changes in the way we manage habitat that's going to affect people is something that's going to have to happen in the future. So I like to think that these decisions will be made maybe easier over time as precedence is set for, hey, we just got to suck it up. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we have lived in the glory days of some species of wildlife in North America, and we're in the glory days of some of them right now, but you just can't get too used to something.
Yeah.
Well, no, the earth, everything goes in cycles.
Yeah.
It is.
And I think some of the few that would be detractors, like talked about in the podcast.
Why I wear my cowboy boots at Biomeda.
are people that saw the real, true, bona fide glory days of Arkansas. You know, Arkansas's highest record duck harvest was 2001 or two, where it was like, it was 1 million mallards. Right now, 1 million ducks harvested, 1 million mallards plus, you know, another million ducks on top of that. That's there's no state that ever has and ever, you know, for a long time, probably ever come anywhere near that. Again, things are just changing, and that's everywhere, right? Like, we've got this hunter problem overall, like less waterfowl hunters as well, mm-hmm. less people contributing to the resource. And I think we just need that. I guess that moment of...
It's there.
Yeah, it is there.
It's there.
Tell me what you mean by that, Austin.
Well, you know, Anne-Marie will know what I mean, and so will Brent. But, you know, I'm 35. I'm not going to say how old Anne-Marie is, but she's younger
30.
Than me. All right, there we go. And we're like at this like generational point in waterfowling where, as Arkansans, we're like still young in the population group, but we're old enough to remember duck hunting, what it was like even in the 90s. But we're young enough to like really see what it is now. And then behind us is this group of public land waterfowlers, and they think that they're going out and having a great hunt because they're killing a wood duck limit. And there's nothing wrong with killing a wood duck limit.
No,
but if we're like trying to benchmark the long-term hunting quality of what an Arkansas GTR is, I'm glad you killed a limit of wood ducks, but that ain't it, buddy. There's a whole lot
There's gadwalls.
There's gadwalls.
There are gadwalls.
That's right.
Bluebills.
And
Webb in Virginia.
And And like as that generation of Arkansas waterfowlers grows, they're like starting to see like, hey, what I've heard about Bimita Hurricane, Black River, you know, Black Swamp, you know, all of these like iconic duck hunting places, like there's something that's not here and I want to fix it because I don't have it now, but I understand that I'm young enough where if we make a commitment now as Arkansans that maybe I'll be able to enjoy it when I'm 50 or 60.
And young and people really impact cool change, yeah. Right? Like young right. people drive change.
And
because they got that Instagram and that Snapchat.
They got that fire.
All those youngins.
And you know, we did four public meetings about our water level changes this year. That we say the average age of our public land waterfowlers are between 22 and 25.
That's pretty wild.
That's pretty young. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I was younger than I thought.
Skybusters. New generation of skybusters.
You're an old man, Skybuster Clay.
They're learning from the best. Yeah,
wait till right. they see the video. Pow!
But the crowd that we had at these public meetings, 100% consistent with that.
That's wow. Cool. That's great.
It's really encouraging.
That's super cool.
Yeah. I won't name any names, but we were in Stuttgart. We had the public meeting at the R&T Tap Room, which y'all went to.
Oh, really? Is that what?
Yeah. That's where we had it at. And there were some fine, red-blooded American males that were ready to go out to Bimita that night and start digging up levees, getting that water out of there. So, yeah.
I think I was just talking about hunter recruitment. I think the biggest detriment to waterfowl hunter recruitment is leaky waders.
You know what? You need to buy your own waders. You had your opportunity at Max the other day, and then you thought about it.
They're spendy suckers. They're not cheap.
Waders and jerk cords.
I have to, we've been talking about, Austin mentioned these public meetings that we had. Those were incredible. They really were. Very informational.
You were able to go to some of them.
I did. I was out of town for one of them, but I did go to the other three, and all very successful, and people that really wanted to get out and figure out, okay, this is something that I'm passionate about. What can I do to help? How do I understand this? How do I take this back and tell my friends? In fact, that's how Austin ended each of those meetings, was the best thing you can do tonight is go out with the information that you learned here tonight and go tell somebody about it. Yeah. And I think, I really do, because of Austin and our staff at the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, that is why so far this has been successful. And I think that's why it will be successful for the future, mm-hmm. is because of the educational aspects that were put in place leading up to it.
I hope it is successful because I want to come back.
It will be. I do. I have faith. And while we're on this, this is something that hasn't been touched, but we've talked about this kind of off to the side. You know, we talk a lot about public land, but also this timber die-off that we're seeing, we're actually dealing with that on our property as well. And we've mm-hmm. had to take a step back. And actually, what I've learned in this process at Game and Fish is really what inspired us to go and look at our own woods and say, huh, we got some leaning trees in there. You know, we've got some floating acorns that we've seen during duck season from these white oaks. And what can we do to make our woods better? And so we've had to go in and do that. We actually left a big majority of our timber dry this year.
Yeah.
And it's something that...
You said something this week that I wouldn't have known the statistic, but that 90% of Arkansas's private land.
That's right. 90% of Arkansas is privately owned. So, but all that to be said, yes, we're doing this on our property, but it benefits the more people that do realize this and that get involved in their own backyards and their own property, the more it benefits the whole state.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of private duck clubs, private landowners, farmers that are getting this message too and doing stuff just like you guys here on your farm. So
yeah, that's right.
Good. It's good. You know what else eats red oak acorns? Squirrels.
Sure do.
They need them. So we're not just saving ducks. Squirrels, Austin.
Make important. Squirrels great.
Make them great again. Hey, closers. Anything you guys want to say? Because this is the last. I'm always a little bit sad when we close down a series. You know, when we got done talking about Daniel Boone, we talked about Daniel Boone for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
We found one of his decoys.
We did find a Daniel Boone decoy. It had on the decoy. I didn't know they had Sharpies back then, though, yeah. But it did say DB.
Or molded flambeau plastic.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Wow.
You never know.
My closing comment would be thank you for doing this, Clay. That I do. I want to say that publicly. Thank you for just taking an interest in this and not even being a waterfowl hunter, but wanting to learn more and wanting to learn more about what we do at the Arkansas Game and Fish, coming into this and spreading the good news. So I want to say
fun.
That. It has
it really
been.
Has.
This
it's,
has been
it's something I needed
week.
Needed to know.
You know, and I know you're a big duck hunter now. You got your own duck call. You have a pair of leaky waders, but hopefully you'll get some new ones someday. This has been has been an incredible week. It's been a lot of fun.
It has. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, Austin, your turn. Raise your hand.
Sorry.
Austin's brain's about to explode.
I'm having a moment over here.
He's challenged.
You need some Crocs?
First of all, for my first closer, I've been the director since July. Amory's been here. He's at 3 years, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm a junior now.
And this podcast is familiar with Luke. Luke's been working for the state chief for 15 years. There's a whole other cadre of guys behind Luke and me, guys and gals that have been beating this drum and putting in the hard work for years and years and years to get to the public to this point, to get this agency to the point. I want to close it out by thanking, you know, Chris Racy, Brad Carner, Rob Willey, Buck Jackson, Garrick Duggar, Terrence Teal, Mark Hooks.
Terrence Teal, is he a waterfowl guy?
They sound like all
guess
the
guess what his favorite duck
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Guess.
Yeah. Gadwall.
So there's
his
just
his wife's maiden name is Gadwall.
There's just a ton of people that have been beating this drum for a long time. They've known that it's been the right thing to do, and it's easy for us to swoop into a podcast like this and talk about it in depth for a few hours, but they've been making it their life's work for years. So just remarkably grateful for them. The other thing is, did you say that you have a duck call?
God, don't ask.
Hand tuned by Jim Ronquist himself.
Nope, he didn't even have to tune it because it was already perfect.
So because I've listened to every single Bear Grease podcast except for the Misty with a Mustache render.
Okay.
I remember that when people would come on your podcast in the early days, you used to make them give a mouth call or an owl hoot, right?
I mean, it happened.
I think it's only fitting that you give us your best duck call.
I will go and get it right now and bring it over here.
Do it. Do you know where it's at?
Yep, I do. Mary
okay, we'll just pause for a minute.
I saw it sitting there. I thought about taking
okay.
it myself.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. Stage is yours.
I believe in you.
Okay. So we've gone and gotten the duck call that I got from I got it from Max, but Jim Ronquist tuned this himself.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've got pictures of it.
It has Jim spit in it.
I mean,
actually,
it probably does. So the other day, I made a semi-bet with Sean that I said, I bet I can blow a duck call that is better than what you think I would. Like, I didn't say it was going to be good. I just said it's going to be...
Whatever your expectations are, I'm going to exceed them.
that's exactly right. And so in Biomeda, I pulled this out and blew it for the first time ever. And it's not the first time I'd blown a duck call. I had blown them before, but probably like 8 or 9 years ago and never had any instruction. Just kind of, you know, I don't even know why I had a duck call, but I had one. And I blew it a little bit. And I understand the sequence. I mean,
okay,
I understand.
Well, let's get to it.
There's a cadence, yeah.
Okay, here it is. I'm going to start off with a quack, okay?
Can you do a duck?
Can you do a gadwall?
Yeah. See, you did
what'd
better.
You think?
You did better than Timber.
That's
did
really
I,
yeah. better yeah, than so. What I thought.
The quack was good.
Yeah.
Now, right here's here was
oh,
my
boy. Here we go.
Three criteria. He had to have a good quack. He had to have good fundamentals of how to hold and place
see, that,
the call.
See, that doesn't mean a thing to me.
And
the
then
world
he had
thinks
to have
they know
greeting.
How to do stuff, but sometimes
hey,
they don't.
Sean
sometimes
has
it
done
takes
it.
A new guy to come in and teach the old guys how to
don't know how to do it the Clay way.
He's still against my...
I watched a video of you yesterday on Instagram, and you were moving your hand like you were
trying
to fly away, buddy.
But you're curving your hand around the end. No, with your other hand. You've been
you're
holding your hand like it's a goose call. You don't do that.
Single
but the quack's fine.
I had a decent quack.
The quack's
awesome.
Fine.
What do you think?
You exceeded my expectations.
Okay, good. Yes. Amory.
I believed in you the whole time.
You thought
so,
so
yeah.
the whole time
Dude,
you're like,
your
he's going to nail this.
But, I mean, can you do a gadwall call?
Meh.
How do you do it?
Stuck in traffic.
Just blow.
It's like a kazoo at a birthday party.
Gadwalls. They got no heart.
Again.
A gadwall doesn't have a soul. I mean, listen to the passion in that.
What did a gadwall ever do to you?
Again.
There you go.
I tried to put an ounce of heart on it, and they're like, nope, that's not a gadwall.
Let me ask you a question.
Can we hear Grandfather Croc call?
Grandfather Croc?
Yeah.
Oh, Brent. Yeah. Here. Yeah, yeah.
Eight years ago, when we were sitting on a bear bait in Oklahoma, and this 150-pound bear walks out with a radio collar on, I said, shoot that one, it's banded. And he said, that bear, that's a baby. I'm like, no, it's banded. It's got a collar on it. He's like, no, this ain't the way we do it.
I was like, this is a duck hunter coming into bear hunting. Yeah, this bear had a radio collar on its neck, and he was like, man, that's the one you want to shoot. You wear that collar around your neck the rest of your life.
He didn't hit it with a rock.
Okay. Is that good? Keep it going.
It's a little tight, blew a little hard.
Give us a feed and chatter. Oh, that's good. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's pure right there.
Yeah. No, he's good.
Meet expectations?
Solid. He met my expectations, which is outstanding.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for being on the render. Austin.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a ton. You guys, welcome back. If you're in Northwest Arkansas, we're doing a render. Just drop in. John, Max, awesome to have you guys. You guys are welcome anytime as well. I guess I got to talk with the main render crew to make sure that y'all met the standard. You know, there'll be a lot of talk.
That's Misty.
They'll be like, well, they did okay. They kind of get like that.
That's, you know? Misty.
Yeah, because Josh will be out there just wishing he was catching trout with a spinning rod. Yeah.
Spinning and sinning. Well, all right, guys. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you, Clay.
Good times are coming.
Yep.
It's been a fun week.
Have the faith.
Great. I'm going to put my cowboy boots back on.
Yeah.
I might get in a fight before this is over. Hey,
who's the guy that does the sound at Meat Eater?
Phil.
I didn't chew gum this time.
Actually, it was Hayden Samick.
Hayden. Sorry, man. No gum.
Hayden Samick texted me the other day, and he's like, was Brent eating candy on the last run?
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.